Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for Stage 3 of the Giro d'Italia 2024 from Novara to Fossano. It's the first sprint stage on the menu, and we've got a whole... A degustation menu of sprinters here, that type of degustation where you're like, how can I be having 12, 14 courses? I mean, it's so expensive. You keep bringing out dishes and I've paid so much, but I'm so full, but I want to try it. It looks so good. That's the list of sprinters we have here, Benji.
Yeah, that's true. We've got the likes of Hayden Groves at Alpecin. We have, why did I start with him? Let's start with Jonathan Milan, Olaf Koy. Those are two names that are pretty prominent. Jakobsen, Tobias Lund Andreasen, who is going to sprint from DSM. We've got Tim Merlier at Quickstep as well. We have Groves, like I mentioned. Also, others like Danny van Poppel, because they didn't come here with Welsford. And I've misnamed or I forgot to name many sprinters like Biniam, like Biffy, like those type of sprinters, like Fiorelli, if you want to count it, Dainese. Stuff like that. So, shitload of sprinters. You in here as well. But when it comes to the sprint stage, when it comes to the parkour of this sprint stage, it's not exactly a flat sprint stage, right? 170 kilometers roughly, but there's some hills in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of hills beforehand, but they look so inconsequential. I mean, They have put an intermediate sprint on the top of a smaller one, but that's like a 2 minute, 1 minute hill. There's like a 1700 meter 4% hill, I don't know, 55k from the finish. But then the final has three hills in the final 23 kilometers, 1.2k 6%, and there's a bonus gate at the top of the hill on Churrasco. Then there's another hill about 10k's later, then a fast descent, like really fast, big highway type descent, short valley, and then the Fossano climb, 1800 meters 4.2% before a 3 kilometer plateau into the finish in Fossano, really long finishing straight. But that hill, that final hill into Fossano, also, I mean, we saw on the Tour de France last year, I think Visma tried to light it up on a hill pretty similar, And like Dylan Groenewegen was sitting there second, like third wheel, Unbothered. Like, this is not the sort of hill that, okay, maybe Merlier loses a few positions, but it shouldn't be dropping really any sprinter in good shape.
Yeah, exactly. Now, at the start of the stage, we were also thinking, who's going to get in a breakaway in this stage? We've got some opportunities in there, and those opportunities are the likes of, well, two intermediate sprints in the first 75% of this stage. And those two intermediate sprints could be handy for someone like Filippo Fiorelli, who is in the Ciclamino jersey. And, well, he's on 42 points before the stage. Two intermediate sprints could lead to 24 points, which means that is giving him enough security to wear Ciclamino another day. But we saw no breakaway at the start of the stage.
Yeah, I mean, this was like in the Tour last year where UnoX got the invite and they were going for Christoph in the sprints. And we don't have Korotek here. We've got Tudor as an invite instead. So Tudor obviously want to go for Dainese in the sprint. And they're not just a TV exposure team. Polti want to go for Lonardi in the sprint, because he won Tour of Turkey stage last week, where Van Poppel got declassified. Okay. And then who's the other team? Bardiani want to go for
Zanoncello or Fiorelli?
Yeah. So, like, if I was them, I would get in the break, but I also understand Monday early afternoon, maybe.
And also because it's so handy for Fiorelli to go in the break, where it's like he could secure it there, but instead he goes towards that first intermediate sprint in the peloton and tries to compete from there, which makes it a lot harder to compete because you're sprinting against sprinters.
Exactly.
Because every single stage so far, we've seen the likes of Caden Groves having a full lead out into these sprints. And that's exactly what happens here again. And we've got a lot of sprinters trying to go for this first intermediate, to the point that 90%, I'd say, of the sprinters were trying to go for that. And they kind of distance themselves before the intermediate sprint from the peloton. They start sprinting. And we've got a bit of an interesting dynamic from Alpecin's side. Grove's not exactly in the perfect position. Edward Plunkart decides to go for a reverse lead out move on the left side. Milan then chooses to close and over sprint him. And in that way, Milan ends up winning that sprint in front of Plunkart, Coy, Merlier, Binyam, etc. Those are the points given. I think the first one gets 12 points, then 8 maybe. I don't know the exact point system, to be honest, but Milan picking up points, which is good for Milan. But I said, there's a division now between that group of sprinters and the peloton behind, and there is one man in that group, the mythical legend that should have been in the break before this intermediate sprint, Filippo Fiorelli in the Ciclamino jersey, who says, well, if I can fuga della fuga out of this breakaway of sprinters, then I might be able to take the full points at the next one, which, good idea, but that actually triggered Alpecin to start thinking, what if we just ride with Fiorelli? And then another sprinter started thinking, what if we just ride with Alpecin and Fiorelli? And everybody started collaborating, and we had a breakaway of sprinters, a 25-ish man group up the road with most of the sprinters, with a gap of a minute 13 at first, but going towards a minute 30. First thoughts?
I didn't understand, because I was like, who's motivated by this? And I guess the answer was Alpecin were the most motivated. They had the most numbers. They have also Caden Groves, who, I mean, when you look at the final results as well, Caden Groves' results in the big group sprints with everyone present, they're not good. UAE, Paris-Nice, and now today, they're not good. And so maybe Alpecin are thinking, okay, we get all these sprinters isolated, we go to that final hill, we can do something. And so I understand it from their perspective. But then, like, Merlier, are you happier with this or a big bunch sprint? You know, I mean, who's dropped really? Like Bauhaus, Pithy, Milano, Gaviria, Jakobsen, only one of those finishes top 10 here and finishes 8th. So all the top favorite sprinters are here in this group one.
Yes, and I'm also looking at the dynamic of, okay, Caleb Ewan in this group. He's alone. He's working in this group, actively working with the other riders. Yeah. Milan as well. All those riders limiting their sprint towards the end, for example, is Ewan, who, what can he get out of this? Yes, he can get a group with, let's be honest, less riders to fight for positioning with.
I think that's good for him, yeah.
So that's better. But on the other hand, he doesn't have any help in trying to battle for the position in that group. It's still 25-ish riders.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not ideal either. So it's kind of a two-sided thing. Everybody collaborated, so everybody spent roughly, I wouldn't say roughly the same energy, because Alpecin not invested more when it comes to their team.
And there was another Intermarché guy there for Bini. Was it Petit?
Yeah, Adrien Petit was there.
Yeah, so the Domestiques should be taking the harder pulls. But then you're right. I think every DS is telling their sprinter, okay, roll through, but don't kill yourself.
But then we see in the peloton behind, because Lonardi wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bauhaus wasn't there. Yeah, Pithy wasn't there, but there his team kept on the side.
Yeah, yeah.
Milano wasn't there. Gaviria wasn't there. First UAE comes to the front. The first team to come to the front when this group is established and starts riding is UAE with 3 riders, but it didn't feel like a pure pace. Felt like the kind of controlling soft pace that a GC group would do, where they'd be like, this group can get away, but let's not give them 10 minutes kind of vibe that I had when I looked at the screen. And then Pulte, Movistar, and Bahrain take over the full work. And Pulte, to be honest, this is the most I've seen of Pulte this entire Grand Tour so far. And they were impressive. They were riding like crazy. They were keeping the gap initially, but then shit hit the fan again. First of all, before we get to that shit hitting the fan, intermediate sprint 2, the first group launched towards the intermediate sprint. Groves has a good lead out again, but on the right side, we have Milan moving up together with Merlier in the wheel. Milan, basically, it looked like he was low-key gapping Merlier there while trying to move up in the wind. And Milan comfortably won that sprint. Like, genuinely looked relatively easy how he won that second intermediate sprint. Now, obviously, we don't know how invested some riders like Merlier are in that Ciclamino at the moment. They prefer a stage win most likely going into this. But I was impressed by Milan at these both intermediate sprints. Alpecin quickly said to the other guys after the intermediate sprint, guys, we got to keep rolling. Yeah. So Alpecin was really the glue that kept this group from working together. Credits to them if that is their goal, whether that... I don't know what it comes to the incentive of every team here, because you've got question marks everywhere. Does Groves feel better when it's a smaller group in the sprint, stuff like that? I don't know. On paper, I didn't believe he had a chance on the finish today in the peloton, so he might as well try and wing it and do something different. I don't know. But then because this first group keeps spacing, Balti keeps spacing like crazy.
Yep.
But at a tempo that actually causes a split, I don't know if it was Echelon related. It looked like they went to a corner and suddenly there was a gap in the middle and there were people behind. El Patron.
Patron.
Luke Blapp. And white jersey Kian Uytebroeks.
Yeah, exactly. So all of a sudden, there's GC action, and that group are kind of hoping that group one stops, and then definitely Coy and Laporte will stop pulling because Uytebroeks is now in group three. But they're hoping that group one gets caught because then Palti will stop. But it's basically UAE with Pogacar and G. I mean, they're not worried about Uytebroeks or Juanpe, but what was it? They're getting pulled away sort of for free away from group three. And then Coy's lead out has to kill themselves.
Yep.
So Eduardo Affini and Tim van Dijk had to basically kill themselves in that phase to bring that group back. And we'll see if that plays a role in the end of the stage. But as well as Jayco the same. They got Ewan and a GC guy.
Yep.
After Dunbar abandoned, I think they're still trying to help Plapp. But
backup GC leader.
Yeah, they have to use a Hepburn or whoever else is here, or Mezgets, and then you've only got Valscheid left.
I gotta be honest, at this moment in the Grand Tour, yes, Dunbar's out. Is it weird for me to think I would like to see Plapp in a free element breakaway role because I do believe he can win a stage that way. And I'm not sure I'm super confident in that top 10 compared to that.
Oh, I think he'll be able to do...
Am I underrating him?
I think he'll be able to do both.
Okay.
Where is he on GC now?
I do not remember.
231. He'll lose more on you mean so he could go on the break on Prati di Tivo, for example?
Not necessarily that's why, but I just, in the past, we all, like the Cataneo back in the day, he always went for breakaways at Androni before he went for GC later. He had two victories in the stages that way. It's interesting how we now have GC riders who never went for those stage wins to begin with.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. I think he will. I think he'll lose enough time that he'll be able to, but you're right. They sort of come first with the GC as priority. Where maybe you think like someone like Filippo Zana, he's here to go for a stage, I assume.
Yeah.
We should have probably said, but yeah, Simon Carr abandons the race. I'm not sure why, if he was caught up in a crash. So one of EF's big mountain breakaway hopefuls, Eddie Dunbar, couldn't start. He had the crash yesterday, lost 6 minutes, issue with a tendon in his knee. And unfortunately, that's another Giro of his abandoned. He had to, I mean, he got to the Giro last year and finished seventh. But he also had an affected prep, I think.
Yeah, and the Vuelta was where he had abandoned, if I recall correctly, at the end of the season.
He did. He DNF'd on a sprint stage on stage five. So really tough luck for Dunbar. I was keen to see how he would have gone, but crash on stage two as well, unfortunately. Anyway, eventually the groups will come back together, which is unsurprising because group one was like, a lot of the guys in group one start, like Merlier start hiding, Laporte's hiding.
Yeah.
They're like, why am I going to keep pulling? Alpecin is trying to keep it moving, but they come back. Palti bring them back. I'm not sure what happened first. I think actually the Uytebroeks group came back.
It was similar time.
Same time. About 45Ks to go. And then we get into the status quo phase. Everyone starts chills out for a bit.
Yep.
All the teams get lined up. We've got, see if I can do my photographic memory. Ineos.
Bora on the left.
I'm going from, I'm the helicopter looking down at the peloton going that way.
So for the audio listeners, what way?
So I am in the peloton facing forwards. I am the peloton.
You are the peloton.
Ineos on the left. Trek. UAE in the middle. FDJ, Bora, and I think I've missed a team.
Bahrain or something?
Bahrain, yeah, Bahrain maybe. And maybe not even Trek, but Ineos.
Alpecin?
Alpecin, you're right. Hermans was on the front. Ineos basically hit the front at 25, 30Ks to go and dominated that position until like 2.5Ks to go. Incredibly impressive. Like their rouleurs are the best in the race by far.
And we need to speak about specifically what you mean by that, because if we compare the position of Geraint Thomas in the last 15 kilometers to that 2.5 kilometer segment you're talking about versus Pogacar, there's a clear difference of risk, in my opinion.
Massive difference. So like Ineos have two guys wide or overlapping a bit, and then four deep. They have eight guys there. They have Sheffield on the back, because he probably can't keep the wheel so well, and he's like sweeping the back wheel of Thomas or whoever it is. And they pick a side of the road, they create that space for Thomas.
A bubble,
and then they got the guys to stay there. They got Foss, Swift, Arensman, Gannett, Narvaez. Like, they got rulers for days. And Arensman's, you know, he's like 70 kilos plus. Like, he can ride the front on the flat. And
this is one of the ideal ways to protect your GC rider.
I mean, it is the ideal, but also you got to have the team to do it.
Yeah.
Like, Bora can't do it. They tried to keep Martinez up there, and you see Bora come up, Martinez in the Maglia Azzurra, go through a roundabout, all of a sudden, washing machined, bang, back. Gamper brings him up, or Mullen brings him up. 2Ks, they're there, fine. Washing machined back. Ineos held that position for like 25 kilometers. Unbelievably good.
Yep.
Whereas UAE went in the middle, and Bjerg was there, and then the guys just, because if you go to see the end of the stage, like, oh, what was the issue? Pogacar there. But if you go watch before the 3Ks to go before the hill, Pogacar is having to do so much himself to move up, and his team was nowhere.
It's like he's in the middle of the peloton in that segment, from 25 kilometers to whatever, in like a line of UAE riders at that initially, let's say, and the side is safer.
Yeah, Ineos, I mean, Geraint Thomas said in the interview afterwards, he's like, our plan was to take the left, dominate the left-hand side of the road and not be in the middle. And because if you're in the middle, like basically there's an Ineos guy on the right of G is on the left where the side of the road is, and then no one can chop him out of the wheel in front. Whereas Pogacar's on the end of that line and there's sprinters, I don't give a fuck.
And the reality is, in this stage, you've also got Oliveira looking after Molano, which means that he's not looking after Pogacar. Yeah. So Pogacar has Novak, Bjerg, Grosjean, and so forth. But then Novak has a mechanical or whatever at the back of the peloton. Yeah. Then Bjerg ends up dropping in the descent in the last 10 kilometers. And suddenly Pogacar is fighting by himself for a position. And he's trying to move up on the left side of the road to a teammate that's sitting a bit forward. Maybe that was Molano trying to prep a sprint. I don't know who that rider was.
No, he went for the door. I think
Laporte.
Laporte, yeah. because he went to Ineos, and we've kind of gone over, but there was an intermediate sprint on top of a hill. It wasn't really contested, and something beeping. Don't know what it is. And basically, Ineos sent a Swift, don't know which one, because they're both, I think it was Connor Swift, and then I think Pogacar took second, G took third. But actually, if Swift didn't sprint, then G would have taken an extra second against his other competitors. But anyway, it wasn't that consequential. It's a second. And everyone told me yesterday that bonus seconds don't matter. So we get to the final climb. They've done this hectic descent. Thank God there wasn't a crash. It was wet. It started raining a little bit. There's white painted lines. They're doing it 75, 80 k's an hour. I'm like, please, no one crash. Go down. If one person slides out, it's going to be over. And then didn't happen, thank God. And then we get to the base of the climb. Ineos start launching it on the left, and that was actually the quicker way. Trek with Sterva try to move up the right with Milan, and Milan and Sterva never find a comfortable sit. It takes so long for Sterva to find a comfortable sit. Laporte and Coya are around there behind Ineos. And then we go, there's a right and then a left-hand hairpin on the climb. Arensman hits the front, he starts drilling it. Ganner and Narvaez aren't there. It's just G now. And that's a big point. I wonder if Narvaez had been there, if this stage would have turned out differently. Honore, and it's lined out. It's much more, this climb has turned out to be much more consequential than
I anticipated.
An 1800 meter, 4% climb. Maybe that, I think the hairpin had a lot. There was the snake.
Yeah.
Has a lot to do with it because they come in, they break, they turn right, stop pedaling, sprint full gas out of it. That creates an elastic effect. Splits, like, and is put in the line. Honore goes for it, Benji. Really nice to see. Like, hats off to EF. What else are they going to do? The breakaway is not going to win. They got no sprinter.
Yep.
It's the only way to do something in this stage.
Exactly. So it was really nice to see him move up on the left side of that line of riders, move up on the left side of Thomas, go past, attack, and we see a response by someone I did not expect to do anything on this stage. Pogacar attacks with Honore. We see a slightly late reaction from Thomas, which is logical, because why would Thomas think that Pogacar would attack on this exact stage on that hill? I wouldn't have thought so. Thomas reacts to Pogacar, gets to his wheel. We've got a three-man breakaway at that point. Behind, who's spacing behind at that point? Alpecin, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, it was a mixture of Alpecin, Trek, Bahrain.
They're like, panicking, they're, man.
Everyone's panicking because Poggy's pulling so strong. He's like, yeah, he's pulling really, really strong. They're not gaining much time either on the descent. And on the descent, in fact, he drops Honoré off the wheel. Just straight up drops Honoré. G's there. Narváez wasn't there. And if Narváez had been with G, I think he wins the stage. Or Ganna wins the stage. But he wasn't in position. Because like...
Well, you say he wins the stage. Who? Narváez?
Narváez wins the stage if he's there, I think.
Pogacar.
Like in...
They're close, eh?
No, Narváez way quicker.
Okay.
On the flat. And also, Narváez would sit in a little bit and G would pull and Poggi would pull.
But Pogacar, in a situation where there's two Ineos riders, I'd be surprised if Pogacar has to do the lead out in the end.
True. Maybe. Anyway, I think Narváez missed a big opportunity.
We're like talking about a very, very specific...
Well, I mean, he won 2 days ago in a sprint. Yeah. So it's an 1800 meter 4% climb. Like he just was out of position. And they go, I'm like, they're not getting brought back that quickly. And G starts relaying. And I was like, that's a bit risky because Pogacar had him on the gap a couple of times.
It depends on how you look at it. Like, if you look at the situation of, I am Ineos, I'm Thomas, I'm fighting for the podium, then it's logical that he's riding with Pogacar because he doesn't care about losing bonus seconds towards Pogacar at the finish then. On the opposite end, if he still thinks about trying to beat Pogacar, he has to try and reduce the energy expenditure so that he can try to win the sprint or make it fail, which is a different kind of vibe. But
I think you do what he did.
I think so too.
I think you roll a couple of turns, but don't...
He didn't push
ultimately. Yeah, but don't overinvest. You hope it goes all the way, and then you hope Poggi gives you a 1K lead out.
And if it doesn't, Poggi didn't get the bonus seconds.
Yeah, exactly. And then if Poggi has to give you a 1K lead out, then you got a fighting chance. Probably not, but...
But also, we're overthinking this maybe because after the stage, he literally said that he couldn't take over in many cadences.
Yeah, he said he was cooked. So... Really changed how the sprint, like we weren't really seeing close up with a moto the front of the peloton because there's no moto in between because of Pogacar and Thomas, and then eventually they're brought back. It was like a mess of a lead out, really chaotic, which is really actually how all the Grand Tour sprints have been kind of in the last 2 years, and I don't even know who did the final lead out, Benji. It was like literally riders peeling one by one with no one on their wheel from their team. A DSM guy pulls off. I think Milan gets left. So Consoni picked Poggi's wheel ahead on the left. And Consoni was going to be like, I'm going to slingshot into Poggi's wheel. Problem was Poggi stops. Consoni perishes. And Milan gets left on the left side of the road. Was it? And then who was doing it on the right?
It's just a very specific two-sided sprint train.
Yeah.
So on the left side, you're right. Consoni helped out Milan because first Stuyven was still there. Milan was in the wheel. Consoni jumps in between in time to take over. Consoni starts going. They catch Pogacar on the left side. And on the right side, it's Tudor that's leading out because Dainese is in third position. I don't know who the lead out at that point of Tudor was. But that lead out goes off the front at 350 meters to go.
Late.
Forcing the second rider in his wheel with 300 meters to go, Tobias Lund Andersen, to launch.
Yeah.
He sprinted for 350 meters. And he had a glorious sprint. And they keep sprinting. And I'm thinking, okay, we look at the positions behind him. Tudor sprinter in the wheel. Milan still YOLOing on the other side. Tries to move to the right side now next to Coy.
Yeah.
Bumps into Coy. Kind of Coy losing momentum. Vernon's just ahead of Coy as well. We've got other sprinters sitting behind. And it keeps on going from there. And Andersen launched very early, but what choice did he have?
Not much. I mean, if you wait, then someone sprints over you and boxes you, so.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
I mean, there's not much you can do. I guess you could try to like slowly wind it up, but Milan, I think Milan wins this sprint if Consoni does his lead up to bring him over to Vernon or Lund Andresen's wheel.
Yeah, because he has to make that bridge himself.
Consoni perishes and leaves Milan on his own, full wind on the left side of the road, and at 60, 65 kilometers an hour, like, you're just doing so many extra watts. And Coy wouldn't let him have the wheel, but then Coy gets boxed. Lund Andresen goes, Milan opens up on the left, and then Tim Merlier comes up on the right-hand side and hits with speed. Binny on his wheel, but the line comes too fast as it opens up, as Merlier opens up the gap to the right-hand side, and Merlier wins the sprint. On the other side of the road is Milan. Both did very, very good sprints.
Yep.
Binny third. Jente Biedermans, I think, got brought up in the wheel of Milan. Fourth, Lund Andresen. Fifth, Coy. Sixth, Vernon. Seventh, Anjelkovski. Eighth, Gaviria. Ninth, and Dainese. 10th. Really chaotic sprint. It's what Merlier loves. I mean, Merlier has won. He always wins the first sprint of a race, just about, except in Saudi this year. But he, like, in UAE, in last year in Tirreno, or the Tour de France in 2021, before he had to go for Philipsen and lead him out every day, he always wins early, and today's no different. But Benji, I actually don't think watts-wise, he's superior to Milan. I think Milan had to do way more.
Yeah, but Milan is also less aerodynamic, yeah? Let's be honest about it.
Yeah. No, Merlier has the gift of timing. Like, when the space opens up, he has the gift, like in UAE three times, just about.
Well, Merlier is certainly one of the best sprinters in the world right now. I'd put him in the top two together with Philipsen, and I can't divide those yet. It's difficult based on what we've seen so far this season.
As
but Merlier has been more impressive.
Sprinter? As a pure sprinter, give me Merlier.
Yeah.
As an overall rider, I'll take Philipsen.
Roubaix, Milan, me too.
hot take, yeah.
It's really close together this year, and it's based on the number of victories, you'd say Merlier. But head-to-head, I definitely wouldn't know who wins the stage before the stage starts. That's how I perceive it, at least.
Especially with the hill like this. This would impress me. I thought Merlier would struggle the way that hill was.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if the guys, Bert van Leeuwenhoek or others, brought him back, but Luke, can we get some input, please? Fabio Jakobsen, 247. What happened? Too hard for him. Luke's given up on Fabio, which means that's a really bad sign. I think he was the last fan.
It was clear to me that they'd go for Lund Andresen based on the fact that they went for him at the intermediate sprints, because you can't just hedge your sprinters in a way where you all let's go for the intermediate sprint and take Ciclamino points there with Andresen, and then suddenly don't let him sprint at the finish, throwing points away by having Jakobsen do it. You can't just do both of that.
I mean Fabio's not finishing this race, but then to your point, you bring a pure sprinter, he's not going to finish the race, and so you start taking Ciclamino points with the other sprinter, then he should be able to go for the full sprints for Ciclamino points, Lund Andresen, which they did. But then it's like, but you brought Fabio.
Yeah. So they both have to sprint in that pure sprint.
You think they're both going to sprint every day?
Well, otherwise, it doesn't make sense for Ciclamino points.
Actually, also, I think they should do that. You know why?
But also, Jakobsen has sweeper in the wheel.
UCI points. Don't you think DSM, they need to be worried about them? They do. They're nowhere.
Like, yeah, but I don't think they're going to be very successful in doing that in Giro sprints.
I mean, how many UCI points you get?
Yeah, but what positions are they going to get?
Lund Andresen got for 50, he got 60.
He was strong, but at the moment, I don't see that victory.
No. Not against Milan and Merlier. They're too quick. I mean, Binny, actually, if the line was 50 meters later, I mean, big if, or maybe 25 meters later, I think Binny wins, actually. Binny was coming. He got a huge slingshot off Merlier's wheel. He looked really fast, Binny. But but the line wasn't there. I'm just looking now. It was a very, very chaotic stage, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were splits. So I'm just looking down the results to see if any GC relevant riders were lost a bit of time, and I can't see.
I don't think so.
I can't see anyone. So it looks like all relevant GC men were present and correct at the final.
About the post-race interviews from both Thomas and Pogacar, Thomas was like, obviously that wasn't the plan. I just followed him because it's Pogacar attacking. So I find it logical that he tries to follow Pogacar when he makes that move. And in the end, I don't mind the amount of work that he did or didn't do with Pogacar. It depends on how much energy he has. And I don't mind that. Pogacar's explanation is quite funny. It's a bit like a game. Like back in the days with my friends, when you attack each other on the flat and small climbs, it suits me quite well. Well, technically, I didn't attack. I didn't. I just followed the wheel. I think he followed his own front wheel.
Yeah, I mean, he dropped Honoré. I mean, it was fantastic to see.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like having a stage like this, which started so badly and then turned into one of the better sprint stages you watch. And it's just now three stages in a row, which have been unbelievably good, having whether it was crosswinds or whatever. No, sorry, the intermediate sprint and then this group of sprinters, then Pulte chasing, then the split, then Urtebrooks is dropped. They come back. How does it affect the lead outs? Bit of tension. Everyone gets lined up. The hills. Ineos really line it up. Poggy goes with Honoré. Is he going to win with G? And then the sprinters eventually come back. Really, really. This is why all the organizers put hills in the final of these sprints, because you get stage like this. But on Poggy, Benji, like, we've heard a lot. He's saving energy for the tour, cruise control. Yeah, but
who said that? Did UAE say that? I didn't hear
No. People infer that.
I didn't hear Pogacar say that. I initially thought it would be logical to me that you save some energy, that I don't go full out for like 20-minute advantage in the Giro if you need to try and win the tour afterwards. But I don't, like, I'm not a sports scientist. Let's get that clear. But I don't really believe that a 10-minute effort on one day will make the difference at the end of the Tour de France.
No. It'd be more like if
he has to chase like an entire day or something.
Yeah, or more like day after day after day after day. Ineos make it hard because they think they're in it to win it. I will say yesterday he the eye test was correct. Like he wasn't that good yesterday. He was worse than in Catalunya by like.
When it comes to Watson.
Yeah, but his was by quite a bit. Now, he didn't have his head unit, and so he didn't know maybe exactly where how long was left, where the hard case
But he also didn't have that in Planche de Belfi, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, also, like, even if you're a decent amateur who rides occasionally with a power meter, you pretty well. Like, these guys ride, they can ride to feel and tell you how many watts they're doing within 10 watts.
He also crashed at the foot of the climb.
Exactly, and that's
valid excuses for it.
Yeah, but he wasn't, and that's just what the numbers say. But then today, very, very explosive and strong on the flat.
Honoring the Maglia Rosa.
Honoring the Maglia Rosa. Actually true. Like, really did in the right way. Anything? I mean, Ewan out of the top 10, Benji, Groves out of the top 10, Milano out of the top 10, Bauhaus out of the top 10, Pithy out of the top 10, Lonardi 22nd. None of those things are particularly surprising to me.
Not really. Jente Biermans being fourth in a stage like this, that is impressive.
That's impressive, yeah.
Lund Andersen delivering at the highest level in the Giro. Let's say it's one of the highest levels in sprinting.
Yeah.
Against a crazy sprint field, that's a very high level. Binyam looked really good today. Yes, it's after a hill, so it kind of benefits him against other sprinters, but still impressive.
Still, he looked good,
So, I don't know. I was very happily satisfied after today's stage, not just because of the sprint itself, also because the Pogacar action combined with the splits in the middle of the stage. The first 2 hours of the stage were horrendous to watch.
Yeah, but don't watch them, you know?
But I was. I was watching them.
It's like, I didn't.
Mistakes were made.
I don't know what I did. I can't remember. Tomorrow's stage from Aquaterme to Andorra on the coast down...
To here.
Well, it is towards here, but this is actually, the Capo. This is actually the Milan San Remo route, but they don't...
A small part of
it. Yeah, but they don't go all the way to the Cipressa, obviously, but they're on the way to the French border.
Yeah.
It's 190 Ks. We have false flat uphill for 80 of them, and then we have a 7.5 K 5% category 3. It's got 3Ks at 6%. No, sorry, 4Ks at 6% in there. So it's not that easy. Then a short descent before basically that hilly coast. That's not even hilly, that coastline. I don't know. Like that hill's like 100 km from the finish. And then there's a 1400 meter, 8.3% climb actually on the halfway through that descent. And then some other climbs where there's the.
Yeah, but this will be slow paced, dude.
I don't know, actually.
Bro, there's a 50 km flat segment before the final hill.
Yeah, but if there's a strong break, you know? Anyway, the keeps going on the flat. Then there's a couple of hills, and they do the Capo Medo, 1800 meters, 4.4%, big ring climb before a descent and a tiny amount of flat to the finish. Like, it's really, you almost have to be first wheel on the descent. It's so close to the finish. I think, don't you think someone like Simon Clark and DeMarkey, like they did last year, or a Magnus Cort, have got an interest in getting in the break tomorrow more so than today?
There's too many sprint teams with the willingness to go for this,
yeah,
that it's going to be too controlled for a breakaway to win this, in my personal opinion.
Okay.
Everybody feels like they can win. Lund Andersen was close today. They're going to be like, ooh.
Yeah. Jaco, I think DeMarkey will go, but.
Yeah, they can hedge on both.
I think a breakaway is more like, so Hesink's out, so Jumbo, Visma Liseberg won't maybe pace. Quickstep will pace. Trek will pace. Polti will pace.
I just want to see someone like Honoré do the same exact thing again on tomorrow's stage because that's closer to the finish.
That's the thing. Shouldn't Ineos launch Johnny or Ganna? If you have it lined out with Arensman like that, or Ganna starts pulling and someone lets his wheel go, I'm sorry, no one's bringing him back.
It depends on how wide the road is, whether there's bends in the climb.
It's the Capo. It's the coastal highway. It's fast. If you put it in a... Yeah, exactly. It's straight. It's not like the bends today.
Yeah, today is different. It's
a bit steeper. But yeah, today the bends, I think, made a big difference. But then if you're clear, like if Poggi had done what he did today on this, he wins because there's really no flat.
Yeah, but I don't think he gets the choice to do that on this one because it's too wide and all the teams will be sprinting into it on that wide road. I don't expect that to happen this time around.
I'm trying to look at who's a super puncher that can do it. I mean, Alaphilippe won't be allowed, but free Alaphilippe. Actually, fuck, I can't say that. His teammate just won the first sprint. Keep him caged.
He was working for it.
Yeah, I would use Alaphilippe. If Poggi decides to go crazy, I would try jump with him and then sit on. And that's the best thing you can do for Merlier. If I'm FDJ, you got to launch Pithy. Pithy's not winning the bunch sprint, Benji. Is he?
I agree.
So FDJ...
But I don't expect him to get away.
And they're another team to... Like, you got to pace so hard. You got to do like a full sprint lead out up
there. But it's 4.4% on a straight highway.
Yeah.
I think we're overrating the effectiveness of that hill because we just saw Pogacar attack on a bendy hill.
Who have you got? I got Milan. I think Trek get it right and then he wins.
I think that's a very good pick.
Binnie's.
I'm going to go, because I don't want to pick the same one, I'm going to go for a double up of Merlier.
Okay. I think we'll see the same cast of characters as today, duking it out. In the Ethan Vernon was in good position, maybe got boxed a little bit or didn't have it. I will be interested to see how that hill gets played out, but I think Ineos will take front position again. In terms of the GC, no changes really, except Chavez lost some time. Inconsequential. And then Merlier's in the points jersey equal with Milan on 63 points.
Mate, Rubio just passed Keon in GC. It's time for an emergency meeting, mate.
Did he? I think that's on stage positions.
Yeah, it's on stage positions.
Oh, where's my phone? KOM Poggi's on 51 points, but he won't wear it. So Danny will be in the Maglia Azzurra tomorrow on his behalf. Kian keeps white jersey and Bora leading team's classification. So any other news around the traps, Benji?
I don't know, dude. There's I've been so focused on the Giro. There's nothing else today,
There's no other races today, no.
Pretty sad, huh?
No, it's pretty good. I like it. Like me when I focus on one thing. Lenny's dad? What was that Lenny Martinez dad? He said something, he gave an interview about Bahrain or FDJ.
He said that his son told him that he would rather stay at Groupama if they paid half of what Bahrain is paying or something, which was... I feel like he's already signed there based on the rumors we've heard from various sources in the last few weeks. But on the other hand, it's also the kind of quote where I'm like, if I'm Bahrain and I see the quote, I'm like...
I think, I mean, he got a lot of criticism, Lenny, for it from France. So maybe it's his dad saying, listen, if FDJ had offered half, we would have taken it. But they didn't even, it's not that they didn't match. They didn't, and maybe he's trying to deflect it and say, look, it's FDJ's fault he's leaving. They didn't offer an acceptable amount of money.
I think that's what he's trying to do. But it also, from Bahrain's perspective, I can see like,
Yeah, that he's basically saying like, yeah, he fucking would have taken a 50% discount to not join you guys.
That's
what he said. If he is indeed joining Bahrain, I don't know if Chiro said that. It's gone to Emilio. Chiro also said this morning or yesterday that Pelizzari to Bora is a done deal, I believe. Chiro tweeted that. And yeah, so that's Bora.
Good rider, JTT.
Red Bull got some money and they're going young because what is he?
23 is my guess. I'm probably wrong.
I think he's younger.
But 22 is my guess.
20.
Fuck, he's
yeah,
20.
He did Lavenir, won a stage last year. Yeah, yeah.
You can do Lavenir at 22 as well, so.
Yeah, that's what you should do if you want a good Neo Pro contract. And then beat up the 19-year-olds. He won the stage 8, which I believe Carlito won that stage in 20. No, Kian won it in 22. And
year before, against Johannessen.
Johannessen out sprinted him in 2021.
Oh, yeah, it was the other way around. You're right.
But Rodriguez was attacking, I think. Okay, so Pelizzari's there. I mean, this is... Remember Bastiatum was saying, like, Bardiani developed him. Like, should there be, like, a transfer fee? Like, they developed him, and that's how, like, football works. I don't really know how football works. I don't like the sport, but...
Why do you drop such complex questions at me, like, at the end of a...
I don't know.
Just a tiresome Giro stage.
I don't know. It's another way for Bardiani to make money outside of sponsors.
I think that exists in other sports, if I recall correctly. But there's some logic to that. If you're a young rider being developed by a team that is not necessarily a development team of a world tour team, then you can have some reimbursement of doing that work. But on the other hand, you are a team that is lower in division than those teams. So it's logical that you're a stepping stone to other riders. That's part of your budget has defined that.
Yeah, yeah. You're not the end destination for Giulio Pelizzari.
Yeah, so you can pretend you're a development team. It's like Androni kind of did that, by putting riders like Bernal on a contract.
They signed the long contracts, yeah.
So then have other teams buy them out.
But that's risky. But then, okay. Yeah, then
they also kind of dodgy, to be honest.
Yeah,
system.
I don't like 19, 20 year olds getting super, super long contracts, but especially if it's a Pro Conti team. But it worked out well for Bernal and Sosa. That's all from us. We'll be back tomorrow for the sprint from Acquaterme to Andorra, Italian Andorra. And I've got Milan, Benji's got a Merlier double up, and I think probably those two will go 1 and 2 in the Quinella again tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.